This episode of the PC Perspective Podcast is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/PCPer and enter code PCPer. And by Lenovo. See more at lenovo.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the PC Perspective Podcast. This is episode 394, being recorded on April 6th, 2016. I'm Ryan Schrout.
I'm Jeremy Hallstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath.
And I'm Alan Momentano.
Ken could have totally put the wrong date in the show notes doc, and I would have read it. So there's that.
Totally.
What makes that different from normal?
Well, sometimes I make the show notes and put the date in. Right, so then I would know I'd do it correctly. I'm just not saying you do it wrong on accident. I'm saying you do it wrong
so
on purpose.
So you're saying you should have put April 6th?
I'm pretty sure I would have just looked at the number. I would have figured it out.
I couldn't forget today's date.
That's right. Because tomorrow is the release of the new Star Wars trailer for
the teaser.
Rogue One.
No, the teaser.
Teaser trailer for the trailer trailer.
But it's a teaser. Yeah. It's a teaser trailer
for the teaser trailer.
Even worse, it's a teaser for the teaser.
Okay.
No. Today was the teaser for the teaser. But tomorrow is a teaser for the trailer.
It's a teaser trailer.
The trailer.
Yeah. It's a trailer with even less stuff than a normal trailer, so it's a teaser.
But the chalice from the palace is the brew that is true.
Right. Right. It's also, it's Ken's birthday or something.
Something.
So there's that.
Good. I'm celebrating. Don't get all choked up on my behalf.
I'm really sad. He's becoming a man, something, being 19 years old, blah, blah, blah. And we had this Lucky Buddha beer today. You said you've never had this, have you, Josh?
I had the chance to have one the other day, but I passed on it because I hadn't ever heard anything about it.
Just tasted like beer.
It's all right. I mean, it's a Chinese beer, right? Yeah. Like, they have a very specific style and flavor and taste of beer.
Is it rice?
I don't know the answer to that.
It didn't taste like rice beer. No,
it
doesn't taste like Sapporo, I didn't think.
No.
But it's got a Buddha on the bottle. It's probably not coming out in the video very well.
Probably not. Buddha.
But it's Lucky Buddha beer.
But it's a non-religious Buddha.
The bottle is a Buddha.
Right. It will be the mascot.
That's holy water.
It will now. Here, I can do this. I can pour the water into it. No, then it'll just taste like beer.
You're
going
to have some skunky water.
Yep.
I hate skunky water.
This will be the mascot at the new Church of PC Perspectivology when that gets founded later in the year.
Scientology?
No, PC Perspectology.
We can get Tom Cruise to come and laugh hysterically.
Yeah, anything it takes to get whatever brings in page views, guys, is what we're doing. Yeah.
So obviously you want to make a lot of money.
Right, so start a church.
Yeah.
Even though the building is a church that failed and is being foreclosed on.
That sounds like the perfect place to open a church.
That makes it the second coming.
True, yeah, exactly. So welcome to the show, everybody. We do record on Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific at pcper.com/live. If you want to join our mailing list, which is now up over 12,000 people strong.
Over 12,000.
You can go to pcper.com/subscribe. You get this little form here. Oh, wait. Do we not?
That's not it.
Nope. How about that one? Anyway, you get a form that asks for your name. There you go. We're on top. It's his birthday, guys. Give him a break.
Yeah.
It's fine. I see you in the chat getting ready to type in your nasty messages. In reality, Sebastian is nothing more than a web page anyway. Right. It's fine. PCPer.com/subscribe. Fill out your name and your email address. And we'll send you an email when we're about to do a live stream, usually an hour or 2 hours ahead of time. And if it's a special event, we'll send it out a day ahead. So you'll always be in the know of the cool, awesomeness things that we're doing. Like we did our HTC Vive and our Oculus Rift live streams. And you probably missed those because you're a poo-poo head. Speaking of being a poo-poo head, if you're not contributing to our Patreon at patreon.com/PCPer...
Is this where I pass around the plate?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. This is... So as part of the Church of PCPer...
We're doing a new outreach with Josh.
This is the early adopters. You'll get a Godfather clause if you go for those.
I got to add a new goal as well as a new perk about... Like, maybe we'll hand out...
see, I can't do like a crucifix with like a piece of fur logo on
it. No, you can't do that. But,
what's our communion wafer?
It's like I can just take a piece out of the wafers.
It's like a thin man.
Obviously,
you know what? Obviously, here I've got what you can do.
Okay.
Indulgences.
What?
Sell indulgences.
So that they're allowed to buy expensive computer hardware?
Sure.
I see.
That you can go to PC heaven.
I see.
But
okay.
Only if you buy it through a sponsorship link at Amazon.
So we do have a Patreon campaign, guys. This is to get direct support from viewers, listeners, readers, however you're consuming us, if you will. Patreon.com/PCPer. It's pretty cool, guys. It's basically like a monthly recurring thing. You can donate as little as a dollar, as much as $1,000,000,000. $1,000,000,000.
Wow.
Yep.
That's all.
Which is like.
It's like a billion.
It's like a trillion. $1,000,000,000?
Depends on which side of the sea you're on.
No, that's a billion.
Yeah,
that's
a billion.
$1,000,000,000 a month would be fine. We could do a really nice church.
Wait, no, $1,000,000,000 is higher than a billion.
Isn't it?
No, not in the U.S. They do $1,000,000,000 or 100,000.
Oh, no, it's a billion. Yeah.
Add three zeros, man.
Yeah.
It's math. It's hard.
Sorry.
But see, if you want us to be educated, you should go to patreon.com/PCPer.
Yeah.
We have some cool things. You can get access to, like, we do a post show every podcast. It's, you know, it could be 10 minutes, could be 20 minutes, could be an hour and a half if Alan is the only one doing it.
That's apparently true.
And we do post it on YouTube as an unlisted thing that we only send out to anybody who is contributing $3 or more per month to our Patreon. So if you listen to the show, watch the show, but you want to see like the pre-show or post-show stuff that we do, that's a way to get that as well. And obviously,
just can't get enough Josh.
If you just can't get enough Josh, there's always more Josh.
Oh, you can get more than enough Josh.
And we greatly support it. And if anybody adds or contributes to the thing, I'll get a notification on my phone and I'll say your name out loud. So you can put whatever dumb name you want in the field and I will be forced to read it out loud. That's for those of you who are watching live. Obviously, if you're watching after the fact and you didn't know how you're listening to it, I will not be able to read your name out in real time.
Well, I know you'll read it out, just no one will hear it.
I'll read it out loud while I'm sitting in my kitchen at home or something like that. And my wife will go, "What?" And then we'll move on from there. You going to take care of that?
Yeah, I got it.
It's important?
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about real quick, before you get into the meat of the episode, because there's a lot of stuff to talk about. I do want to mention and point everybody to Maury's follow-up article on the Thermaltake Core X9 EATX Cube chassis. That is this enormous beast of a machine here. I still look at this picture, and it doesn't look like a big case.
Until you realize that those are 5 1/4 bays.
Right.
Since we last talked about this case, I've seen one in person. I'm pretty sure I can live inside of it.
Yeah.
And then also get mine. That's like a full-size GeForce GTX 980 Ti or Titan X or whatever that is in that window there.
Yeah, it's only taken like, you know, not even halfway across.
So here's that summary. Let's see what let's look at a couple of things to see. Oh, he was mounting his rads and all that in there this time. So if you want to see his radiators, Josh. Radiators.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, the thing is that we learned that Maury needs bigger rads.
They're not filling up the space really well enough.
No,
it's not fulfilling.
Well, the thermal take chassis. The third 5 1/4 bay.
Yeah. Even if you just put like a 6X CDX burner.
You should put that fan controller he reviewed in there.
Yeah, that's true. You could do that too.
He needs to put a Kenwood TrueX.
So I mean,
in there.
That's one of those. What's that monitoring thing from the Asus?
OC bot.
Yeah, OC bot there in one of the 1/4-inch bays. And there it is from the side view. Look at all that empty space.
Yeah.
You put so much stuff in there. So Maury walks through his build, his installation process with all the radiators, and he only has one power supply.
Turn that into a small library for a
Wyoming
community.
What's that second add-in card?
SLI, right?
No, I think that's just a...
We're talking about this thing right here next
blank.
To the video cards? It's got blue protectors on
it. It looks like it has a DVI port on it.
Yeah, and there's like an HDMI thing at the bottom.
And a missing VGA port.
Yeah, that's got to be a blank. I don't know.
If only we could ask him. If only somebody knew
him. Oh, it's probably a low-profile card, and he didn't bother attaching the last connector to it.
Why? But why? Why would he have a low-profile card?
Because he wants...
See that right there?
He just wanted to fill the slots, man.
That's something.
What, is that a sound card?
That's a Sing Labs ET6000.
But that's got... Is that a capture card?
Is it a TV tuner?
I don't know. Like, it's got HDMI on it.
Yeah, does it doesn't have a coax in.
That's HDMI on the bottom, most of them.
DVI.
Yeah.
What?
Somebody should ask that guy.
PCIe.
He's got all kinds of crap in there. What the hell is it? Doing?
He has dual 970s, a 750 Ti for physics, and a PCIe pass-through TV capture card.
I mean, if you got space, I guess just put crap in there.
Exactly.
All right, go Mori.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Oh, look here. We get a better view. And does that help anybody?
It's a capture card. He just he said.
Oh, he's oh, you're reading in the chat. I'm not reading in the chat. Okay.
It's two 970s, a 750 Ti, and a capture card.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just guessing.
No.
Good guess, though.
That'd be an awesome guess.
So, lots of pictures here, lots of cool kind of dissection of what this process is like. I mean, if you're just looking for something to look at, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So check that out.
Or live in.
Or if you're looking for something to live in.
I'm looking to move places. Like, I think that's about the square footage I can afford.
My wife would like to house more small children.
You take the two VR base stations, you put them in either corner of the case.
Right.
Then you.
I think you could do a whole room.
They're cheaper than a crib.
Whole room
you
VR
could do
in there.
Room scale VR in that case, I think.
Yeah.
That's what Valve and HTC should sell is a box, is an enclosure.
It's a room.
Like that's like, look, just put this somewhere and go.
I've got a great business.
The Steam room?
You know, like those pods?
Oh yeah.
There you go.
Like just a pod, like portable on demand VR. Pover.
Just like ready to go.
Drop off in your driveway and then there you go. VR.
Yep. That's the next $1 million idea.
It's the next $12.50 idea.
You could even
put a little insulation in there. You attach it to your back door.
Yeah.
You can lock yourself out. It'll be cool in the summer, warm in the winter.
All right, so we're going to talk about VR for a little bit. We're going to talk about our first attempts at measuring VR performance. And I had this thought process yesterday or the day before. It was at night. Kelly was out babysitting some other people. I was home with Emmeline by myself. And she was asleep on her boppy pillow. And I was like, I was bored. I was watching dumb TV, basketball or something that was on. And I was like,
so did you jump on the boppy pillow and launch her into orbit?
No, she was sleeping. I prefer when she sleeps at night as opposed to being awake. So I wanted to leave there, but I was like, I could go play some VR stuff.
Yeah.
And then I thought, that's not a great idea.
Without the headphones.
If you're home by yourself with like a kid, if you're a single parent at home with a baby or a child, that's a really bad way to parent.
Fairly irresponsible.
You should
just smoke some dope instead.
But no, come on, Ryan. You had two headsets. Hook her up with one, with the other. That's
one on the kid.
Yeah, have her wake up and be like, I should do that when if it's light outside and I want her to sleep.
No, listen.
Put a VR headset on it that looks like it's nighttime.
You put a green screen behind her and set a camera up on her and you code the game so that if you look in the back corner, there's your kid. Right?
And,
go check on her.
Our buddy Andrew had a better idea. It was just like, you just need to like pit the monitor audio into your headphones somehow, whether it be Bluetooth or
seen a mixer connection.
And like I have a video monitor, right? So there should be a way for like maybe instead of using the front facing camera of the Vive, it actually, if I double click it, it shows me the baby's picture.
No, you just turn on the front facing picture of the Vive, then look at the baby monitor.
You could do that. Like, no, everything's
and all
fine.
You see are a bunch of dingoes.
Maybe the dingo ain't jumping.
Checked it too late.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, and your audio stuttered a little.
Tape a controller to her and she'll be tracked in game.
That's right.
Controller's on the kid's back. And so there's actually a baby crawling around in
the
game.
My hand is leaving.
We need to make like an IR collector baby vest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you see the kid crawling around your feet, so that way you can't trip over the kid when you're doing your whole room VR.
It's good.
Man, we've got all the business.
But we
got
to do that
tonight.
For the dogs, too, because I did have that issue with the three dogs. When I was doing VR, one would, like, I'd be standing there doing something, and a dog would just kind of, like, sit in front of me, like, hey, what's going on? And then I would take a step forward, and I would kick the dog, and they're like, oh, man. It's like, dummy. Can't you see him wearing this VR?
VR.
I can't see you.
Making owners kick dogs everywhere.
Quick thank you and shout out goes to Robert Doyle and Rich Tyndall, who just updated their pledges.
Awesome.
On Patreon. Thank you, guys. So let's get into it. This is so I'm not going to talk about this a whole lot. I'm going to kind of brief through this because
we have two long videos on it.
Yeah, we have one long video on this.
On the other stuff.
We didn't take a video.
We didn't do a video
stuff.
Of the Lighthouse stuff.
Oh, yeah, there wasn't a video of the Lighthouse
stuff. So we have one video that discusses VR performance on our YouTube channel, or if you go into this article, the video is embedded there. And it's fairly long. It's like 25 minutes, something like that. And we go into a significant depth on the how, the what, and the why of it. But the basic premise is now that we have both these VR headsets, we're starting down the path of benchmarking them and trying to figure out how to benchmark and compare, you know, how would you compare graphics cards on the HTC Vive? How would you compare CPUs in the HTC Vive? All those types of things.
Yep.
And it's way, way more complicated because none of the existing tool set that exists, as I just said, works in the way we want it to.
Yep.
Right? So even older, what I would consider kind of slightly outdated tools like Fraps, even though it has lots of interesting use cases, and PresentMon, which is a newer kind of updated version of something like that that works at DX12 and stuff like that that we're still experimenting with.
Yep.
It doesn't see a lot of the picture that we're looking at. And the reason is because the game is no longer sending calls to DirectX. DirectX talks to the driver talks to the display, and boom, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's now an arbiter in between it where the game engine actually submits a frame to the VR SDK, whether it be Oculus or OpenVR for SteamVR. And then that SDK, that API, is responsible for submitting the DX calls where appropriate and sending output to the display. Now, also kind of complicating this is the fact when you hook up a Vive or a Rift to your computer, it does not show up as a display.
Yeah.
Right? It's a direct input device that you really basically have kind of no input into. And as far as I can tell from talking with both NVIDIA and AMD and Intel at this point, they don't have a way to kind of intercept any of that stuff. Right, they're very much a servant of the SDK and the API from Oculus and SteamVR as well.
Yep,
they're just passing like it through, basically. The game is and DirectX is to some degree. Right,
yep.
The SDK has final say. Now, a lot of that could change in the summer when we get more Windows updates, but this is what we have to work with.
So does the game use DirectX first and come up with the frame and then pass it to the?
I don't think so. I think basically instead of doing a present. Like, basically, it gathers all the data that would normally gather. Instead of doing a present, which is basically a DXGI call, it says submit frame to Oculus.
So
probably the same data
set. So
it
literally passes all the stuff like draw a polygon here, a polygon there. Like, all that goes through. Huh.
You know,
how is CPU usage with this? Because it's obviously going to be doing a whole heck of a lot more work, as well as probably would it be sending frames to main memory?
Well, no, I mean, I think the VR
It's passing through a lot of
it. It's basically just passing a lot of it through, but it's adding other stuff like the overlay of the environment and like the other, you know, stuff, or whether or not you want a time warp, a frame, and that kind of stuff.
So my guess is that it's kind of, it's the intercept of all the DX stuff. It passes it off to DirectX, right? And then it gathers the result from DirectX and would output it to the screen on its own, right? And so I think that's going to add some CPU overhead, especially since it's doing compositing.
Yeah.
But in theory, it shouldn't be a whole lot until you get into the very complex stuff about warp and you know, it's kind of updating its own internal timers, right? The game engine.
Yeah, but it's still being sent out through the HDMI port, right?
On a video card, yes.
Yeah, and so is there...
There's a copy involved in
that. Yep.
Okay, is there a chip and local memory involved with the actual Oculus itself where it controls some of that, or is it all
software
driver magic?
Yeah, straight from the video
card. So when you look in the NVIDIA driver, when you look through the NVIDIA driver details, it sees the Vive or the Rift as a direct input device, right? So the GPU and graphics card are aware of it. My guess is that it still has like a memory location buffer that it's writing to, but it kind of has the final say on when it gets output to it, right? As opposed to the GPU doing the flip itself. Or maybe it's just a coordination between the driver and the SDK to like agree upon, look, you just do it when we tell you to do it, no monkey business about adding in extra frames or added delay or anything like that.
That device that you see may very well be, like it says, the input. It might be just the way that the VR software is getting like position changes and stuff, not necessarily what the video is going out to.
No, it's, I mean, because that would come in through the USB, right? Like, your position changes.
Processing being done in the headset. It is HDMI to a chip that splits the HDMI to two MSIs DSI displays.
But then how does it do the time warp when you turn?
It resends the frame.
Yeah.
It resends the frame.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. Resends the frame warped.
Yeah.
And to reflect the position change.
I think it resends the frame and the GPU is doing the warping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So it's.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah. This one I am. Yes. So because of all that complication that obviously, I mean, to be fair, we're still trying to figure out and finalize and get final answers from everybody. And the two SDKs APIs work a little bit differently as well. So because of that, we can't just get an easy data and we can't use our frame rating kind of capture based FCAT style, performance testing because we can't capture the output that goes to the headset yet. And we don't have an overlay for it, even if we could. Mm-hmm. And the overlay would be really complicated because it's not a straight edge bound, and there's all kinds of things that would go on. It's all solvable. It's just we're not at that point yet. So what we do is, in this kind of iteration of what we think we're going to do, is we're going to combine two sets of data. One is the present mon data, which is a present call, which is actually a present call going from the SDK to your companion monitor, your computer monitor, yes. Not your headset.
The little window that it puts on your desktop that shows other people what you're doing in right. the game, basically.
Oh boy, that's trouble.
Yep. So that changes based on the game. That changes, like, people can adjust that. So it's not
some games will get really close to doing kind of the same thing.
Yep.
So what some happens games when you turn your monitors fly? Off and there are kids around?
Yep.
The monitor is off.
Yeah. Will it still display?
Oh well,
we'll still measure it. Yeah,
some games will
privacy screen, Josh. Privacy screen.
Some games might drop frames there first, like if it's getting too busy.
Yeah,
just random. You know, like another big thing is the display. You have to have a display if you want the closest to optimal. You have to have a display that will go 90 hertz,
not 60, not 120. Yeah, it has 60, to be able to be set at 90.
We tried 120. It was actually a worse.
Yep.
You know, because basically it was out of sync.
Some games right. will even let you move that camera for that view.
Right.
Like, yeah. So VR space.
It won't work with every game, and it may not work with a lot of games, but we're still kind of messing around with it. The other data point that we're taking is from, it's only available to us in Steam VR, and it looks like this.
This is a horrible amount of data.
This is part of the Steam VR frame timing output that you can get when you start getting into the developer options and stuff. And you get all kinds of information, a lot of which I honestly don't understand quite yet completely, right? Like like the idea of poses where it's waiting for getting to get poses when a new pose is ready. That's essentially the tracking of your headset and your controllers. There's negative time at the bottom, and that is because this is happening like the previous frame.
So you're getting the right? poses a frame before.
You're getting
before,
the frames. Yeah, you're getting them ahead frame. Of time so you get him to the game engine so the game engine can do whatever the crap it's going to do and yep. then goes from there. But the data we're taking from it that I think is most relevant for our particular use case in terms of graphics card testing mm-hmm. is total GPU. It's this teal line kind of at the top that's really hard to see. And with total GPU and then correlated present mon times from the companion monitor that we check and validate match the experience of what we're seeing in the head-mounted display, we can come up with interesting data. So we're using a game called The Gallery Episode 1, Call of the Starseed. It's a very complex name, but when asked some people who have a lot of experience with VR games, what is the most kind of graphically intense title that they've seen so far? This is the one, and the developers were awesome. They helped answer a bunch of questions for us. And I do want to point out that every developer I've talked to has said that the viewport, the companion monitor, is a bad way to measure performance.
Yep.
Right? So if you are only looking at presentmon data, if you are only looking at Fraps data in VR testing...
You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong, right? And if you're not... Even if you're not at the very least correlating those performance differences with something that is happening in your headset,
yeah.
then... the numbers you're talking about just are meaningless, right? So I'll show a couple of these graphs real quick, but then I'll move on. The one I just talked about? The gallery,
and then there's a bunch of words.
Starseed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a result of HTC Vive running on the GTX 970 on our $900 system build. And the orange line here is present mon. That's our Fraps kind of game time that's being sent to the monitor, not to the headset, right? And there's a lot of jitter in it. There's kind of a lot of variability that's kind of a trait of having VSync back pressure being put on a game engine. And then the blue line is total GPU render time. And the total GPU render time in this case hovers around 6, 7, 7.5 milliseconds. And the presentmon time, although a lot of variance, is obviously standardized at 11.1 milliseconds, which is 90 frames per second.
Yep.
The end result here that we verified in our headset is that the image is smooth, the animation is smooth, and we can kind of correlate that to because the GPU render time is well below the 11 millisecond cutoff that it needs to have, that it needs to have in order to maintain good performance of the headset. Now, if we use the same system and we go against the developer's wishes again and turn it from a low preset to a high preset, we get this graph. Now, things look very different.
Yep.
If you there's two scenarios we're looking at. We're looking at a fire, a campfire in the game, which is very GPU intense, and then we're looking up at the sky, which is not. So if you look at the orange line, remember these are frame time, so lower is better. That first section here is us looking at the fire, it's 22.2 milliseconds, and then when we look to the sky, it settles down at 11.1. We look up at the fire again, it slows down, and look up at the sky again, and it goes back down to 11.1 milliseconds.
And what's interesting there is that the GPU is actually not too far past the threshold. Like, it's not going too slowly, but it's just slowly enough.
Right. So, and if you look at the GPU render time, that blue line, in the parts where we're running at 45 frames per second instead of 90, the GPU frame time is above 10, maybe between 10. It's between it's 10
like,
and 11.
It's missing
maybe
it by like 11. A millisecond.
But you've got to remember, a lot more has to be done than just the GPU render time. Yep. There's CPU stuff, there's compositing, there's other things that have to be accomplished in that 11.1 millisecond window.
Yep.
So essentially, what happens here is the GPU render took too long, it pushes the whole thing out of the 11.1 millisecond window, so we get back into 22.2 because it's the next VSync step down.
Yep.
And obviously they're not going to do tearing on a head-mounted display.
No.
And that's the result, right? And then the last one I'll talk about here is that if we take the high preset and look at it on a 980 Ti, right, where we have a lot more compute power, notice that we still have this blue line goes up and down based on if we're looking at the fire or the sky.
Yeah, we're standing in the same scene, the same spot.
But it never gets up above, you know, never really gets near the 10 millisecond mark for the total GPU render time. As a result, the game present time stays pretty static at, you know, 11.1 milliseconds. We're able to hit that 90.
Did you feel any of those spikes?
No.
So they were just momentary, didn't even register.
Yeah, that was just like...
Oh, you're talking about the orange lines there?
Yeah.
No, you don't feel that. That's
something with how we're measuring it.
Remember, this is what's going to the monitor, not to the head-mounted display.
Yeah.
So what we're more kind of looking at with the orange line is, where is it standardized at? Where is it kind of...
Yeah.
Where is it trending at?
And another thing that's important to note is that when, if you go back up to the one where it's actually slowing down, right, that's only what's showing on the monitor that slows down. In other words, your headset, what you see through the headset, if you're moving your head around, that still stays smooth at 90. It's the scene changing. It's like
you're not explaining this well.
No, it's the stuff in the scene.
I know.
Well, it's hard to explain.
It's hard to explain. Like
the system will always keep you turning your head a fluid thing, even if the game engine is having a hard time doing animating the stuff
so,
in the scene.
So what Alan's talking about is a phenomenon that we saw in there where when we're looking at the game at 45 frames per second, if we moved our hand or we saw some animation in the game, it looked like it was running at 45 frames per second.
Yes.
But when we turned our head, it did not feel like it was running at 45 frames per second.
Correct.
It was running at 90.
Yeah, that stays smooth.
And the reason is because we talked about that in-between step that Oculus has, Josh. It is able to do a time warp on the frame where if it's compensating for head motion, right? So it shifts the rendered image, the already rendered image, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, or up or down, whatever direction you're turning, right, with a warp, and it's got to do some more complicated math than that than I'm saying, but it shifts it a little bit so that at the very least, at every 90 hertz refresh cycle, you are seeing the correct panning motion from it, right? And there's other side effects go along with it, like pull in and stuff that you can read the story to get more detail, but the effect is you are looking at two different animation rates on the screen at the same time.
Yep.
Right? Because the Oculus SDK or SteamVR SDK or API, whatever it is, can't fix the animation of the hand. It can't warp the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The GPU has to render it. The game engine has to know about it. Like, you can't do that.
If something's walking by in the scene, if some object is moving,
anything
you can't
that's
predict
occurring.
The pose.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah. You know, that's part of it, too.
Right.
But, I mean, well, actually, no, I take that back because it is predicting the pose based on your head movement. Right,
and that's the pose of
the controller movement.
Well, it knows where the hand is, but not what the hand is doing.
It knows the controller is moving, and it's pulling that at 90.
It knows what that's doing, but it doesn't know what the game engine thinks should happen with that data yet.
Yeah. Right.
All it can do is take the entire scene and move it in a direction.
Yeah.
Right, and that's called time warp. And both Rift and Vive, or both Oculus SDK and the SteamVR setup have that capability. And so it's a pretty cool thing. I would encourage you guys to go to that article and look at the data we presented. We show a little bit of like AMD versus NVIDIA very, very quickly. Again, this is one game, one scenario. This is kind of us brainstorming out loud, if you will, about how to test VR. And then you can check out the two videos, one that shows the comparison of animation, like a hand an in-game animation versus a sweep animation. And then we have a video that tries to show you the time warp pull-in effect, which is pretty interesting too. All this is to say that it's really complicated crap.
It is.
And we don't really have a final answer. I don't think this is a perfect solution. I just think it's the best solution that we've been able to come up with at this point, or that anybody's been able to come up with at this point. So my goal probably for the rest to the end of this week is to maybe find a couple of other games where we can profile this, say, okay, now that if we pick a game where there's a scenario where you can do this, we can get interesting data. Now let's compare, you know, cards 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and see what the data comes out looking like. A lot of, because the unfortunate part for me and for us is that a lot of times we spend a lot of time generating a bunch of data and going, well, this is all garbage. This says absolutely nothing, or it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It doesn't correlate.
And now it takes like two people to generate the data.
Yeah, you've got one person having to like have the headset on.
Yeah.
Or
okay, look up, look down.
If you followed us on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, or you follow us on Facebook, you'll see that I posted pictures of like a tripod with a Vive headset and Mickey Mouse ears, R2-D2 Mickey Mouse ears on it, and then we were using that to try to get smooth pans and stuff across. So there's...
It wasn't working until we added the Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah it really gave it personality.
That was the touch.
Yeah. So there's that. We've talked about that for a long time. Any other input from the two of you that weren't here in this office dealing with it the whole time?
The thing I took away the most from it, well, I'm just adding a little thing.
Go for it.
Was that because of the way that those results come out, like it really, really matters how fast your GPU is, because once you get past that threshold, it just throws you into that slower rate.
You're always running beast.
Going from 45 to 90 is a significant difference.
And it's a very much on-off thing. 90 to 45. It's like either you're fast enough all the time or you're not. Like you're just going to know.
And many people hypothesize that like, oh, time warp will save us.
It won't. Not
from
for that stuff.
Those, even if it, right. That's what I'm saying. Some people hypothesize that, oh, it will save us from the every once in a while drop down below 11 milliseconds, and it kind of doesn't, right?
Yeah.
It keeps
your head, you know, feedback to your eyes from your head moving. It keeps that fluid. That never really changes, but the scene updating slower. It's like you're just sitting in front of your computer. You can move your head around. The room still seems fluid, but if your game starts updating slower that you're looking at on a display, right? Yeah. It's kind of like that, right?
So go check out the...
Go ahead. Later, start painting the wall.
Yeah, because if it wasn't smooth, that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So go check out that story. And like I said, we have a longer video that goes into more detail on it and kind of goes through each of the data examples point by point. So check that out if you are interested. And also, real quick, we're going to talk about this one's neat, but there's not a whole lot of like analysis that goes into it. Alan wrote up a cool how does it work for the HTC Vive's Lighthouse tracking system.
Yep.
And this is basically, there's a precursor at the beginning of this about like how IR has been used in video games back, you know, that's how the motion controllers in the Wii worked.
Yep.
Right? Alan brought in his sweet modded Nintendo Wii gaming console for us to look at.
With the blue swatch case.
And we're able to take this picture here of that working. And then it's hard to see in this, but there's a picture of the Oculus Rift with its setup.
You can actually see the LEDs lit up.
Yeah, and it's got LEDs on the back, which is interesting because the Vive has no backtracking stuff.
It's true.
You know?
It relies on the
dual...
Well, not just the dual
sensors.
It's got
some outside.
But it kind of has some rearward-facing sensors.
Yeah, my experience, those aren't great.
Yeah.
But so one of the more interesting parts with the Steam VR setup, the HTC Vive, is these lighthouses.
Yep.
It's these little What does he call them? It's a lighthouse tracking system.
Either beacons or base stations.
Beacons or base stations. So it's these two cubes that go in either corner of your room that are responsible for locating your headset and your controllers in this room scale environment the whole time. So what's the base stations?
So when did the Stylons start showing up?
Soon.
Yeah. So they kind of so you had the Wii, which emitted a couple of light sources from where your television was, and the controllers actually had cameras on them, right? And then you have the Rift, which has a camera that sits on your desk, and then the head-mounted display is emitting some light that camera looks at, right? But to go full room scale, you kind of have to make it – you have to remove, like, resolution from the equation, right? You have to make it so it's not a camera with a resolution. Because if you move far away from a camera, it can't tell the orientation of a bunch of little dots anymore.
Sure.
Right? So the way to get away with that is kind of take the pixels – from what would be like a display and just scatter them throughout the things and emit light from two sources in a very timed fashion.
I'm not sure about your analogy, but I understand what's going on, right?
Yeah. Like, so what happens here is you have the beacons or the base stations emit a sweep of light that sweeps across the room.
So what we're looking at here is what? This is two motors and...
Yep, they're actually...
infrared lasers.
Yes.
Right, yes. Lasers.
So there is a grid of LED, infrared LEDs, and they're there just to act as a strobe. And actually, as many beacons as you have, they will strobe at the same time.
If we put a smoke machine in this room, would we be able to see them?
No, you need something that can see IR.
What if I put smoke in the machine and we had a camera that could see IR?
Then you would see it.
Okay.
That's a totally different conversation, Ryan, which we still haven't figured out.
And the sweeps.
I can get a smoke.
The sweeps are relatively fast moving, like flat planes of IR.
Right.
So it might actually be kind of hard to see that with like a camera that, you know, had a lower refresh rate.
That's true.
But so you have this array of LEDs that emits a pulse, and that's more like a timing thing. That's so that all the things in the room have a point of reference for time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then shortly after that pulse happens, or that blink is actually the term that they use for it. Then a sweep will come across the room. And it will be from either one of the two beacons, and it will either be an X or a Y axis kind of thing. It'll either go across the room or like from bottom to top of the room, right? And all of the sensors in all of the devices, know where all of their sensor positions are relative to like the center of that thing.
Okay.
Right? They kind of have like a 3D CAD kind of idea of where all those things
that
are,
makes
sense. And those sensors will get hit by that sweep at different points in time, right? It's going to run past all those things at different points in time.
So the difference here is that the intelligence in the Rift is in the camera, right? The camera and the software is reading the location of dummy IR LEDs on the screen, right? I think it's actually
in the system because the camera has to be USB 3. For the Rift, very high bandwidth.
The camera's just passing data through.
Yeah,
right. And the difference between that and this is that the controller and your head-mounted display on the Vive,
yes,
actually have sensors that are reading the lights.
Yep.
Themselves.
And all of the intelligence and the math isn't it's trig, but it's not compute intensive trig to go from a amount of time between the blink and the sweeps hitting the sensors to a what's called a pose, which is like, you know,
where
in space is it?
Where was this thing?
Yeah, and how is it oriented in space?
Right. Yeah.
So all those little dots on the Vive are actually IR sensors?
Yep, those are actually IR sensors.
Yeah, behind the plastic is a little sensor. If you look towards the bottom of his second page, you'll see this, right? So this is a teardown of one of the controllers, and each one of those little
dimples.
Pieces of silicon is where a dimple would be, and it's a sensor.
It's just a photodiode.
It's a photodiode.
You would think that there would be cameras on little lighthouses that are pointing into this room space while strobing, and you'd just have IR reflectors at that thing, and it would be...
That's where Alan get into the talk about the resolution, right? Is because if you were further away from the lighthouse, the camera might not be able to discern... very accurate. Think about it.
You can have the two controllers.
Grabbing those photons is entirely accurate.
It would be a nightmare for a system to try to discern those things from a distance, right? Because if you had
slightly overlapping ones at an angle, or
if you had your back to one of the beacons, mm-hmm. and then you had like your, and this happens a lot in a game, like if you're in Office Simulator or something, you're trying to eat a donut. You take the controller and you put it right to your mouth.
Yeah.
So now you have the head-mounted display and the controller, like you'd have points, like all right overlapping with each other, right? Right. And it would be.
Yeah, and the bandwidth of that point is pretty wide, so it's hard to resolve which is when, which is where.
Right, right. So this way, with this kind of a system, it doesn't matter how many things are in the room. As a matter of fact, you could have like five people all playing with fives with the same two beacons.
Yeah, check out this little animation in this video here. Where it's the laser that is pulsing, right, goes through and it basically activates the controller and the headset as it passes.
Yeah, but it goes through them. I don't think it does that in
real life. It doesn't go through the person. But,
That's more to your point, Al.
Where are the sharks? I want the sharks with the laser beams on top of them.
So we did, did some high speed video of what these things look like, which came out pretty cool looking. And the way it works out is you would get a sweep from both beacons in the room, like X and Y, and from both beacons. That only happens 15 times a second, actually, to get fixes from both, like the full sweep, X and Y, from both beacons.
Right. Happens 15 times
a
second.
It's only 15 times a second. But you're able to do stuff, move around much more fluidly than what 15 times a second fixes would give you, and that's because all of the controllers and the head-mounted displays also has an IMU, which is like a six-axis gyro. Yeah, so that's how it fills in the gaps, right? It's just like, okay, let me get a fix on where you are. Okay, now I know where you are in the room. And then for those little, few milliseconds in between, it just kind of runs on, dead reckoning off of a bunch of inertial sensors and gyros.
Right.
Yeah.
And as one of our initial converts, PC Perspectology in the comments just sort of mentioned, I was going to as well. It reminds me of the motion capture that you see actors doing with ping pong balls strapped to them. Except it's an active emitter as opposed to a reflector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's
would
more the
that
way
that
not
Oculus have been an easier work. Way to do it as an active reflector?
That's more the way the Oculus would do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Because the Oculus system is a camera looking at the people.
It's worth,
so you've got to do it differently.
It's worth noting, it's worth going to this story and checking out the teardown, because Alan just kind of took one apart and you can see the motors in it and all that kind of stuff. Yep. It's a neat looking gadget.
And they are
it's relatively, the thing I think that you were most impressed with is just, it's really simple.
It is a simple thing.
Once you just the math and the trick.
Yeah.
The device itself is pretty simple. And if you, I think his name's Alan Yates, the guy who created it. Yep. And we don't have a picture of it in here, but he did a version of it on a breadboard.
That was just the amp for one of those.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
The collector.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's okay.
It's to do the math, it's actually just a hardware ASIC that they, made just to do that math specifically as fast as possible, right? But, yeah, back to what Josh was saying, those beacons are actually super, super simple. The electronics in them is just to keep the motors running synchronously.
They don't communicate with the PC at all.
Well, they do only to tell you what firmware it's running on, basically.
They don't communicate with the PC at all. All they do is they sync up with each other.
It lets the PC know if they're in sync with each other.
Yeah.
But it's not, and there's no real-time data coming. There's no, position stuff. They just sit there and do their, laser beam sweeps across the room, and they stay. As a matter of fact, they're still running right now. The system
that's
is
why
off.
I'm being irradiated by infrared laser beam.
There's two beacons running in the room right now.
Just
think
of all the vitamin D you're getting right now.
Yeah, your tan is coming along nicely,
that's
Ryan.
Good.
Is that why I was sunburned last week?
Yeah.
Damn it. Damn it.
All that VR you were doing.
Like I said, I really encourage you guys to go to look at that story as well. It's a neat thing to kind of see how it works and how it differs from what Oculus is doing. I'm very curious to see what Oculus will do when they release their touch controllers.
I am too.
Are they going to go to this type of system, or are they going to go with the two cameras system? You got to have two, right?
Yeah.
Because your body can block things. But I'd be curious. I will say in the demos I've had using Oculus Touch, it doesn't feel less accurate.
Right. From what I've seen just using both of them, Oculus seems to be able to just have been designed to kind of skate along more on the IMUs than the position tracking.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's how it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could even take, like...
They kind of added the IR just so you could get forward, backward motion, I think, a lot of it.
You could take the retail version of the Rift and put it on. Like, I didn't even have the camera plugged in the other day. And I put the Rift on.
And it works.
And you can totally look around. You can't move around and have it track your movement, obviously. But, like, looking around, it's still smooth. It, like, stays locked on. Whereas the Vive relies more on that. Like, if those sensors get blocked...
If you're using the Vive and somebody stands in front of the sensor, you might as well just throw the headset off.
The screen cuts out.
It will eventually, but sometimes it kind of like stutters and shifts real quick as like lasers. We also have to it's worth noting that we had an issue in our office where the IR lasers were kind of bouncing off of some particularly shiny things, I guess.
Yeah, some shiny things were throwing off the timing.
And we had a very specific point where we could hold our controller up in a spot, hiding it from one lighthouse sensor and not the other, and our hand would just float away.
Yep.
So and then we'd move the Rift, it so the other one could see it, and it would come back, and
we could float away. So the Rift appears to have been engineered to prioritize the IMU over the position tracking, and then the Vive is the exact opposite. Like, you can only cover up, you can go like this on the HMD and cover up the sensors, and you'll be grayed out within like a quarter of a second.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're not moving or anything.
And then which happens, like, when you're shifting your thing.
Yeah. The scene just grays out. Yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff. I'm excited about that. And we have a lot more to do with VR. Before we get into our ad, I do want to say I got another shout out here for Hassan Raza, who updated his pledge from $5 a month to $5.43. 5-4-3. So we appreciate it.
We have a 21 coming in.
Yeah, if he had done 5-4-3-2-1, that'd have been way more impressive.
Maybe that's what he's going for.
But you know,
next week it'll be 2-1-0.
Yeah, it'll take a couple of months, but that 0.0021 will add up.
I agree. Thank you very much for that. We'll take a quick break here. Thank today's podcast sponsor. That is our friends at Casper. This episode is brought to you by them. That's an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost.
Hey, I heard they were making pillows now.
Are they really?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I meant to tell you because you like that bed.
I like that bed, and I need pillows.
Yeah.
I like where this is going. Yeah. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly to you guys, the consumer. Benefits of Casper are that it's an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. It provides long-lasting comfort and support. I got my Casper mattress and set it up. It's very soft, very comfortable. The setup process is actually fun. Right, you get this 100 and something.
Do you have
a
video up somewhere? Of you
doing I don't think I ever. It's on my phone somewhere. I need to do this. But they deliver a 100 and something pound box to you. It's very dense. You and a friend carry it upstairs, wherever, you know, open the box up in the room which the mattress will be installed.
Yes.
It doesn't explosively expand. It slowly expands. But it's very cool.
Yes, it's not a mattress box.
You actually cut a zip tie, and it's like a popcorn kernel. Poof! and all of a sudden, you're up against the wall. No. You can buy these mattresses easy online, completely risk-free, and you can try sleeping on a Casper mattress. This is a really cool thing. They understand the importance of truly trying out a mattress that, in all reality, you will spend a third of your life on. If you're like Alan, like a half. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period, 100 days, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom and go through all that rigmarole. And did you know, statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether the bed is right for you?
Especially with memory foam, because you have to warm it up in order for it to, like, it's more...
Yeah. Ken knows.
Just saying, like, when it's cold, it's much stiffer. So, you know.
That's not usually how it works, but that's interesting information. No. Casper mattresses are made in the USA. You can get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing this to industry averages, that is an outstanding price. And you can save an additional $50 as one of our audience members simply by going to casper.com/PCPer and entering the promo code PCPer, all one word. That's casper.com/PCPer, promo code PCPer. Terms and conditions apply. And we want to thank Casper for their support of the PC Perspective Podcast.
They now have pillows and sheets.
What the?
Sheets?
Yeah.
I need to talk to them immediately.
The same 100-night trial applies to both.
For the sheets?
Yeah.
I can try out sheets.
What's so special about the sheets? Like,
nothing can go wrong there.
They're probably very nice sheets for inexpensive price.
I will send an email as soon as Josh starts talking about processing.
They are soft, strong, breathable sheets engineered with one of the longest cotton fibers in the world.
the longest cotton fibers?
Yeah, you don't want one short of. Fibers.
Why would... What? I don't understand that.
I don't know.
They need to update their ad copy and and start promoting this stuff.
We need to talk to them. Look, they got
and they also have right responsive dual layer pillows, which adapt to your movements throughout the night.
I need that. Pillows that respond to my movement, like, hey, stop it. Like, that would be a pretty good
It just punches you in the face.
You know, we're getting closer and closer to Dune, where they had, what, the cat chairs?
Yes.
Remember that?
No.
The furniture that actively responds to how you're sitting. And
What about the automatic drying jacket from Back to the Future 2?
That was
we're still working on those lace-up sneakers.
Yeah. Like, soon.
Yeah.
That's soon. And Nike has that. They're ready. All right, let's get into our next story here. NVIDIA Pascal architecture details of some kind have come out. This was part of the NVIDIA GPU Technology Conference. CEO Jensen, did you guys see the tweet that I...
Which one?
...sent into our Slack chat, right, where it was like... Somebody was like, oh, I'm so excited to see Jensen, like Jensen or UN Wang, WANG, come on stage. And it's like
his name was three names?
Well, his name is Jensen Wong, right? But it's HUANG.
And there's a hyphen in between Jen and Sen, depending on who you are.
Yeah, it's funny. But he has an American spelling for a source name that's just Jensen, so that we don't have to. Our dumb American minds don't have to worry about it. Right? In any event, they announced the Tesla P100, which is actually a...
You got the keys to it?
Electric car.
It's an electric car. It's the most advanced hyperscale data center GPU ever built. It's not a graphics card. It doesn't have display inputs or outputs. It's a module, a kind of a socketed module.
Costs as much as a car.
Yeah, it does. that... is used for high-performance computing. I want that to be up front. Like this, the GPU they announced as part of the Tesla P100 is meant for high-performance computing.
This has no display outputs.
It has no display outputs.
That's true.
But that being said, it is Pascal, and this is the first product we have seen announced on NVIDIA's new Pascal architecture.
Yep.
Right? So a couple of things. The Tesla P100 is not a full GP100 GPU.
Okay.
It's a little bit cut down, which is interesting. So either they had some yield issues they had to deal with.
It is a pretty big die.
Yeah, but the full die is GP100.
Oh, I get it.
Right? And they had to cut some of it back in order to either hit yields or hit pricing or whatever it is.
That's what I'm saying. I was like to, you know.
It's still the same size, just disabled.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I'm just saying. It's a pretty big, like, larger the die you're making.
It is 610 millimeters.
There's more stuff you have to, like, you know, bin.
610 millimeters square. It's a little bit bigger than Fiji, right, Josh?
Say that again.
610 millimeters is a little bit bigger than Fiji, right?
just a little? Yes.
I think Fiji was 600. Even fully erect?
Yeah, it was about 600, 601 for, the AMD part that made up Fury.
Yeah,
and if you look at those pictures, and we know that HBM2 is larger overall, even with the 4 gig size stuff, there is absolutely that may not be the best picture of the guys with from Computer Base. But anyway, that's pretty dang close. There is no space whatsoever in between the GPU and those memory modules.
Yeah,
and I mean they've maximized the space potential of those interposers far more than what AMD did with the Fury X. But it's a large chip.
Yep. This GP100 will have a full GP100. So I'm going to really focus on talking about the GP100 chip rather than the P100 GPU.
Right.
Because we're not going to get Tesla P100s in here. This is not a product for gamers. It's not a product for enthusiasts. I'm more interested in what the GP100 chip is.
Yeah, like how does that chip compare to the previous chip?
Basically? It has 3,840 CUDA cores. Compare that to the GK110, Kepler, had 2,880, so 1,000 more than that.
Another 1,000.
But the GM200 had 3,092, but the Titan X, what did it actually have? 2880, something like that. Yeah. So it had, this is going to have in theory, this GPU could have 1,000 more processing cores than that. So about 25% or so. Obviously important for high performance computing. This has 8 times the amount of double precision computing power as Maxwell. Maxwell's the big Maxwell GPU.
Dude. Right.
Right. So
yeah, FP64.
Yeah. So we're at, where's that at? Where's our T-flops? 8 times
the double precision.
Although.
This has, so they announced that Tesla P100 had 5.3 teraflops of double precision.
Okay.
Right. Whereas GM200, the big Maxwell,
yeah,
had 0.2.
Yeah, they terrifying. Never released a FP64.
Correct. If right. you wanted to go back Focused to the version. GK110, it had 1.6 teraflops. Yeah. So you're still going from 1.6 to 5.3.
It's a big jump.
That's still a huge jump.
They ain't screwing around.
No. And what was the... Did they not list the other teraflops for 32-bit? No, then they didn't. They listed...
It's like 10 point... For 10. FP32, 7. It was like 10.3.
Okay.
Or 10 point.
And then they also quoted an FP16, which is a half precision.
Wasn't the other good part of the story the clock rate was...
Yeah, like so if you look at... The clock rate of this Tesla part is 1328 base and 1480 boost, which is really, really high.
Yeah.
Especially for a chip that...
It's really large.
It's really big.
It's 15 billion transistors.
It's big. And in general, and correct me if I'm wrong, anybody.
You're wrong.
These are the parts that they would tend to not clock that high. Right. I know Ken has pointed out several times that it's got like this ginormous cooler on it.
It's got like a two-year tower cooler.
And it's got like a rack mount, a set of fans blowing across everything. Sure.
And they're making so much money, so much profit margin on the P100 that they're probably super binned.
I would think. I mean,
but do you think?
I think they're just getting anything out that actually works for a wafer. Yeah, because it's anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 per Tesla P100, and if you consider that a cutting edge entire wafer of dies costs anywhere between $5,000 and $12,000 fully processed, you really have to wonder what the yields are from NVIDIA.
Or it's just we can charge this, so we're gonna charge this.
Yeah.
Not, there's no competition right now.
The server that they announced that this goes in was what, $129,000?
It has 8 of them.
It has 8 of them in there. Each GPU is a 300 watt TDP. Like you said, 15.3 billion transistors. It is obviously 16 nanometer FinFET. Look at this die shot, or not die shot, this block diagram.
Like, there's too many blocks for the pixels.
There's your GPU. It use high bandwidth memory, HBM2, so 16 gigs per GPU on that part.
Yeah.
What do they rate the bandwidth at?
It's like 790 gigs
per second. Yeah, per second. So more than double that of the Titan X. It's
not the full 1 terabyte that we were expecting. They downclocked it.
Ugh, losers.
Well, it's also the interconnect problem in a way, too.
It also uses...
They want you to buy more than one.
Yeah. It also uses NVLink. And this is their kind of proprietary solution to connect GPUs that goes up to 20 gigabytes per connection, 20 gigabytes per second per connection, I think.
I think so.
Theoretically.
Yeah. And then if you have like this setup with all these GPUs, you can yield 160 gigabytes per second in both directions on this. Yeah. I wonder, Josh, do you think they'll use NVLink in the consumer space at all? Will they do that for like SLI? Something like that, where you have, instead of the SLI bridge, you'll have an NVLink bridge on the top.
Yeah. Well, they could do that, because if you look at the, I think, computer-based DE, they had a picture of the back of the P100, and it's a really unique-looking connection. There's no reason why they couldn't do that. Well, not that exact one, but to have all the NVLink stuff.
A unique connection on there.
Exactly. Parts, so you'll have an over the top connection that will be NVLink rather than the regular SLI.
We don't know if there's a high die cost or something like that to have it adding NVLink to the platform. Probably not.
Really none. Yeah. It's going to be PCB costs and pads on the chip. That's they've already got those covered on the P100. It's not a big deal.
So if you had a couple more takeaways from what they announced, right? Because keep in mind that they didn't announce a GeForce product. There's no consumer part on it.
Right.
I do appreciate Jensen's 5 miracles part of his speech. It really goes into
Saint Jensen and his 5 miracles.
Our church of PC Pertology, PC Perspectology.
What are the patron saints?
What are a couple of other takeaways you might have from this, Josh?
16 nanometer FinFET
I'm amazed that they have a GPU this size and working and able to hit 300 watts TDP with the $15 billion transistor count and going that fast. Because if you look at the previous generation 28 nanometer, that was, what, half the size and could only clock up to, well, I mean, for a 275 watt TDP, that was, what, around 950 megahertz. So it's a significant jump. And so that tells us that their next generation Pascal stuff that's going to be the smaller chips, they're going to be pretty power efficient, but they're also going to see a nice clock speed increase. So talking, I would consider 1700 to 1800 megahertz with parts that... What?
That's a lot.
It is, and they're going to be parts that will have more stream processors than the... say GTX 980 Ti, but not by much. I mean, because they got to keep things smaller, more economical. It's going to be probably, you know, next generation stuff that we'll see this summer is going to be GDDR5 and 5X because HBM2 production is just not where it's at, where it can support both NVIDIA and AMD. I think that NVIDIA probably went to Samsung and said, we're going to pay you a lot of money. Because we've got some margins that we can really...
As it turns out, we can pay you a lot if we sell them for $19,000
a piece. Go ahead and start this HBM2 production for us and just sell to us. And I think that's probably what happened. And we're seeing that because AMD is not going to have any HBM2 until HK Hynix... SK Hynix.
Yeah, there you go.
SK Hynix.
Starts their production 3.
Yep.
And that might overall, also explain why... Samsung recently sort of broke the 10 nanometer barrier to open some of those solutions because they might have gotten a bit of research money a couple of years back.
Hard to say, but... Yeah, but I think it seems like NVIDIA is probably working with Samsung to get the HBM2 out and well before AMD is able to do the same thing. I think it's interesting that NVIDIA did kind of throw... a lot of money into having a huge single big die as compared to what AMD has shown off so far with the Polaris processors, the P10 and P11.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, those are relatively small products that they're probably producing a ton. NVIDIA is in volume production of this right now. And, they have maximized the die size of this and probably the largest interposer that they can get that's going to fit in the reticle size. I mean, you can stitch interposers together because the features are just so big, but that gets really expensive. It's like, oh, hey, we've got three interposers that we can put on this 12-inch wafer. And that just, no. It's not very cost-effective, but, you know, it's NVIDIA, and they've got $12,000 to $15,000 to play with in margin. Trying to think what else. I mean, there's
for the interposers though, they can make them relatively quick because it's not like they're going through a lot of steps.
Exactly. I mean, process. It's not like you've got, you know, 12 metal layers that you got to do and depositions and all of this other stuff. And you know, you don't have to do immersion lithography. You don't have to do, you know, really complex masks or double patterning and all this crap.
But you could probably set up a fab for them with all of your old kit that you had from three
It's like, you know, ago. The feature sets are 100 microns.
You know, all that gear that you upgraded from and stuck in a warehouse.
Like us.
You know, you could just set
all
back
the stuff
up.
That's on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, we should just make a fab.
So I'm excited about this. I'm ready to see what the consumer side is. Like I'm actually kind of tired of Polaris demos and like Polaris leaks and like all these little things that they're showing. Like, okay, I get it. Just show me the crap. Like, show me the stuff. And we start down this path with NVIDIA. They tend to be a little bit different in their marketing style with this. I don't imagine they'll suddenly start showing smaller Pascal demos at these things without first kind of doing a bigger reveal. But I could be wrong in that. So
you know what the bad thing about P100 is?
It costs $19,000.
Well, 12 to 15. But you're not going to see that in any kind of consumer stuff until at least late Q1 of 2017.
Oh, at the earliest.
Do you think they will ever release like a GP100 consumer part?
It depends on how well TSMC does, what kind of changes that they can do to increase bands, because we know that AMD has been able to sell plenty of 600 millimeter square GPUs with interposers and HBM memory. Eventually, that technology is going to become less and less expensive. They're going to get better at integrating the package. The memory is going to become less expensive. 16 FinFET Plus is going to start yielding better. They're going to make changes low level in terms of metal layers and other areas to increase yields and bins. And so, yes, it's going to be like, you know, getting a GTX 780 back in the day.
Right.
It was, you know, a detuned card that had plenty of pieces that were disabled but still worked perfectly fine and made for a great graphics card at, you know, a $600, $700 price point. And this will eventually happen. But it's going to be interesting to see what kind of competition, because that's when Vega is going to be coming out from AMD.
Vega.
Vega?
No, it's Vega.
Vega. And also, you know, what other technologies is NVIDIA working on? I mean, are they going to have multiple GPUs on the interposer as well as the memory?
Oh, that would be amazing. It's going to be
interesting stuff.
All right, that's pretty cool. Go check out that story, guys, for some more details on Tesla P100 and Pascal GP100. You guys ready for Pascal versus Polaris and screwing up those names all the time?
Sure. Yes.
Well, I'm glad everybody got pop filters for their microphones recently. So, all right, we've got some more things to get to, and I'm going to be honest with you, we need to do it quicker. So, Josh, how quickly can you tell me about the AMD 7th Series Gen A Series SoC?
It's a pre-announcement, so there's not much to say.
Fair.
Essentially, this is the Bristol Ridge Jeep APU.
All right.
It is based on the Excavator Core. It has the latest generation of GCN modules. It is essentially the same as Carrizo, except it was given the Gotavari treatment.
Is that good?
Better thermals, better power consumption, better turning on and off portions to give higher levels of boost for longer periods without exceeding TDPs. So you've got higher performance at the same TDP, but it's essentially the same chip. So they've worked with GlobalFoundries. From what we figure out, they've improved the overall process. We've seen this with the previous Gotavari stuff as compared to Kaveri. And it's the same thing. Carrizo going to Bristol Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it's a more competitive product. And these will be the chips, the APUs that will be populating the AM4 boards that will be coming up. They're going to release these at Computex. We don't know a whole lot else, but I originally thought that it was a more interesting chip than it was, because the way they sent us the die shot, it looked like there was an entire border of new stuff all around. I thought, oh, more PCIe lanes, more power stuff that is going to give this better performance. Other type of things like perhaps, you know, USB 3.1. No, they just zoomed it out and cropped all of the edges of the chips around the central die. And it made me angry. And a nice guy from Germany told me, he's like, no, you done screwed up, son. And he was right.
All right. Well, that's good. I did.
But, you know, it's going to be a better performing part. It's going to be more efficient, but it's not adding a whole lot from what we have seen from Carrizo. And it's going to be very curious what actual desktop parts look like and what TDPs they're going to exist at. Computex.
Fair enough. Computex. Turns out stuff's going to happen at Computex. As it turns out, I may go to Taiwan again. quick shout out before we move on to the next story to Pylon Squelch. We just pledged $3.21. I don't know
why that's funny, but that sounds.
I don't know, but I said I would read their names. Pylon Squelch just pledged $3.21 a month to our Patreon. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right, we've got a couple of other things. Jeremy, what do you know about this? So Actually, I kind of feel bad talking about this now. The, yeah. We talked about the Tesla GP100, and now AMD has a dual Fiji card for your server room.
Well, I mean, it would be awesome if it wasn't for that damn Jensen who screwed it all up.
Jensen!
But, no, I mean, it's a new Fire Pro refresh, the S9300X2. And honestly, it's nifty because this is HBM memory for your servers. Sadly, it's HBM1, so each of your GPUs gets 4 gigs of memory as opposed to the 8 gigs. On the other hand, it might be out a little bit sooner, and it's going to cost you a little bit of money to get. But apart from that, I mean, they've dropped the clock speeds a little bit, so they're down to about 150 megahertz.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's 2 full Fiji cores. So you're looking at 8,192 cores, which is a decent amount of cores. Out of that, a good half gig of texture units, 128 ROPs, because they come divisible by twos. It's nice. It's lovely to see a nice refresh to the Fire Pro because, you know, AMD still has a place in the hearts of many people on this planet, and we'd like to see new products coming out from them. We'd also love to see newer products coming out from them, but, you know, at the same time, it's just the fact that we get a double GPU Fire Pro to this, which is passively cooled.
Yeah.
It's not anywhere near, like, the entire car. Well,
it's not passively cooled.
It has to go.
It's not water cooled.
That are rolling.
Yeah, there we go.
They kind of claim, but at the same time, the entire card has a TDP of 300 watts, as opposed to each and every single processor. So,
for also, once, this has a price of $6,000.
Yeah, the price.
Shit, that's it. It's not 19.
That's not 15 at all.
No, it's not 15 at all. It's kind of hard to talk positively about, but at the same time, AMD has the lead on thermals against NVIDIA. Like, yeah. The entire thing is 300 watts right now.
Well,
this is not bad.
Yeah, but you got to look at performance per watt.
Yeah.
Right, and that would be the real telling thing. Also, okay, Jeremy, are you going back in time, perhaps? Are you turning into a Back to the Future 2 joke?
He's de-rezzing.
Your video is like turning black and white. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, there's some weird stuff going on with my...
It was really dark at one point, and then it became normal, and now...
Yeah, no, it keeps changing, and then it goes totally ginger.
It's coming back.
Right? Yeah. Like, I'm not usually this red.
That's okay. That's okay.
And then it does this.
This is really good stuff.
That was creepy.
The Logitech camera is really upset with the creative stuff that I have plugged in right now that I'm testing. It's kind of amusing. So I've just been watching myself change color the entire time.
But can it do sound effects?
No, but I can.
Can you sound like a guy who owns a white van and says free candy?
Please don't. Please don't. I don't need that.
Don't turn that filter on.
No.
All right.
Let's move on.
We've got a new AMD Fire Pro, and it got stomped on by NVIDIA.
Yeah, it's just, sorry, guys. It's just poor timing. EVGA.
Yeah, but it's half the price of the NVIDIA product.
Is it half the performance? What was its... does it give you any... T-flops? 13.9 T-flops.
Yeah, 13.9.
So that's FP32. So it's not bad.
Yeah. So that's all, like, and a single GP100 is like 10 point something?
Yeah. 32 bit?
Yeah, FP32, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so okay, maybe its performance per watt is better.
Yeah.
No, if you don't need the obnoxious power that NVIDIA is offering you right now, it is still a decent choice. It's also probably going to be a lot smaller because those were freaking 2U coolers on that thing, so it might be a 2U server. It's probably more likely a 3U. This is the
NVIDIA one
you
mean?
That one's a 3U.
Yeah. Also coming up, EVGA releases NVIDIA GeForce GTX 950 low power cards. This is just kind of basically a continuation of this weird trend we've had that I really need to be asking some people about releasing 950s without power
connectors. Power connectors?
Yeah.
So 75 watt?
Has to be at most 75 watt video card.
Hey, they're starting to utilize that third generation TSMC 28 nanometer process.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
These are cards with 768 CUDA cores, 2 gigs of memory. Primary difference between all of them will be clock speeds. If we zoom in here on this graph, we can see here that looks like, let's see, 1317 is probably our maximum clock speed. That's pretty good. 1127 base, 1317 megahertz boost clock on that for the GTX 950 SC.
That requires it 6-pin.
Oh, I'm looking at the ones at the bottom. Okay. So it goes up to 1253. Like,
if you get to a point where you're
so the GTX 950 SC new version without requiring a 6-pin power is a 1076 base clock and a 1253 boost clock.
Still pretty close.
And the performance of that one is better. So you've got better or good, but not best, because you can't do best with a 950. So there's, I mean, 4 options from EVGA now that will be power connectorless 950s. They must have a lot of 950s they're trying to get through. I guess now in the summer, that's got to be part of it.
I wonder how much those cost,
because both Intel and AMD, you know, integrated graphics is not nearly as fast, but.
Sure.
If you really want a standalone video card, you're probably going to just spend $200 and get something that can do 1080 and 1440.
Yeah. And our final news story today, the HP Spectre 13.3 is apparently the world's thinnest laptop.
Oh, have you not heard? It is a CNC machined aluminum chassis as thin as a AAA battery at just 10.4 millimeters.
Just one thin little waffle.
Just the one thin as a waffle.
But not wafer, instead AAA battery.
Well, no, it has a wafer in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's
it's several. A full i5 or an i7 even.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a M.
CNC machined aluminum. I like... So what do you guys think about this logo? This new HP logo, by the way.
The logo's good.
I like
it. It's an old one.
What? Yeah. It essentially says, let's get this party started.
No, let's they tested this started. About 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, they like...
And they didn't do it. No. I don't know why.
It showed up a couple places, but they never actually use it, and now they switched to it.
I like it. So it avoids the Core M processors, opting for full Intel Core i5, Core i7, Skylake parts.
Is it a touchscreen?
I
wouldn't think so.
Or if it's care. That
right?
No, it is not.
Okay.
High-gloss copper accents... Innovative hybrid battery split into 2 thinner pieces delivers the same wattage as a single battery for up to 9.5 hours of battery life. Full HD IPS edge-to-edge display.
Copper accents. That's how they cool that i7.
That's right.
Oh, no, it's a hyperbaric cooling again. It's a
recessed piston hinge. Look at that. That's actually pretty cool. See how the hinge works? It's a recessed piston hinge.
I wonder how well that works.
Well...
I like it. I kind of like it
better than the watch band.
It does look really thin.
I just don't like the copper.
Really? I like it. I think it looks nice. I think
copper and black is nice. Copper and black is nice.
245.
Plus, you can lick it and it tastes like copper.
Yeah.
2.45 pounds. That's not as thin as light as I thought it would be.
Come on, it's copper.
Well, it's made of metal.
Are those USB 3.0 ports on the back?
I think those are Type-C.
Type-C USB?
So all the USBs on the back.
And a Kensington lock at the end.
They got 3 Type-Cs on it.
There's your headphones.
That's an audio.
That's headphone jack back there. Uh-huh.
You'll never be able to connect anything to it.
Yeah, actually, is there a regular USB on this thing?
Type-C.
No. 3 Type-Cs.
So you have to carry
2 of which support Thunderbolt. Unspecified version.
Well, it has to be 3. It's got to be 3.
I'm assuming it's 3. You don't release
something
like
this. It's got stereo speakers for Bang & Olufsen. 3 multifunction or full function USB Type-C connectors, including 2 of which support Thunderbolt. I think it's pretty cool looking. And this is apparently a look at the inside of the Spectre 13.3.
Yeah.
That's pretty small for all that stuff to go on. So starting at a Core i5 6200U. Intel HD, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 or 512 PCIe SSD, 3X USB 3.1. So, yeah, not having a regular USB Type-A connection.
You plug something into in a pinch.
That's kind of a downside to it. But
so you keep an adapter in your bag, I guess.
It has to ship with a carbon fiber and copper adapter. Nice little USB hub.
It's not a horrible pricing on this.
No.
The Core i5 version with 256 gig SSD, it's $1,170.
Well, there's no reason to buy the
i5. It's a horrible price on the
i5. Yeah, look at the i7 price.
Yeah,
why would you not buy the i7?
For $70 more. Yeah. Huh. And it was a 13.3-inch 1080p screen?
Probably a little bit lower battery life on the i7, though, because I doubt they're adding more battery.
They're not adding more battery,
but the i7 should clock
They don't mention the resolution of the screen in this particular thing. Oh, full HD. Yeah, it does.
Probably do QHD. Okay. Everyone does it.
Hyperbaric cooling. Otherwise known as fans. But, I mean, you can see, like, this is all chambered off here.
Yeah. The hyperbaric cooling is different.
Yeah. Interesting.
Laptops usually don't suck it.
No, usually they're just blowing hot air out and sucking cool air in, or just passively getting cool air in. This is sucking cool air
in. Through your keyboard. I think this is really cool. I want to see one in person and see like what that hinge feels like and how the thinness affects it. Like, does it
how far back that hinge can go?
How far back can the hinge go? And then also, how much force does it take to break it?
How loud it gets?
Will it blend?
Yeah, if you're actually doing processing on it, how loud is it getting? That would be interesting.
Yeah, do remember it's not a detachable screen. In theory,
does it fold all the way back?
In theory, yes. I gotcha. All right. That is all of our news and stuff today. Let's get into our hardware and software picks of the week, he says as he clicks around for everybody else's links that are just added while he's doing everything else for the show.
Bullshit.
Not that anyone pays attention
Lies.
To the stuff that we have to do.
Besides, your pick is pretty.
Well, I had it in there before the show.
Mine was in there before the show.
I don't think it was.
Yep.
Not when I was clicking all the links. Let's put it that way. Slack is our recent replacement for HipChat.
HipChat
went down for like a full day. I was very sad. And then I also realized in doing that I don't have a way to talk to anybody else, really. Like, I was going to send everybody an email or something? No, that's crap.
I'm just touched that you were upset by that.
Let's go back to Yammer.
We go back to Yammer. I forgot that we had that before HipChat, right? So Slack is a team communication for the 21st century, as this says, right? So it's kind of IRC upgraded and updated and modernized, right? So you can do file attachments, you can do linking, you can do searching, you can do...
Does it say, uh-oh?
It does, yeah. Uh-oh.
Those
were good.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
You basically can create channels. You can do direct messaging, drag and drop, share files. This is if you are in a small work environment or even a larger one, really, and you can create like smaller sub segments within it. Slack is a very easy to use. It's got good web apps. It's got good Windows apps. The phone apps are good as well so far. And it seems to work really well. And there's a completely free version. That's the one we're still on, actually. It limits how far back you can search and the size of attachments and things like that. But I think the payment is maybe $2 per user per month or something like that.
It's not bad.
Yeah, which is what I was paying on HipChat for the same kind of additional functionality. So Slack is kind of the newest one of these, the one that has the most support, I think, from larger publishing entities.
Probably
right?
Better uptime.
I mean, I hope so, right? HipChat, God love it. We had a lot of issues with
their mobile.
Last
the Slack mobile apps actually work.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mobile HipChat apps were like not fun. Yep.
I think is this just slack.com?
I think so.
Yeah, just slack.com. So check that out if you're kind of looking for it. And I think, can you use this not for like a work thing, but for like your group of friends? Right, you guys have like a Slack channel or something?
Yeah, there's a couple like organizations that I belong to that use it as well. Like a lot of open source stuff, we'll just use Slack as a what people used to use IRC for essentially. But it's a more convenient thing than downloading an IRC client on your phone or whatnot. Yeah. You can just have this nice mobile first,
and the client is friendly to be logged into multiple of those things,
right?
As well, so.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah,
it's designed for
the mobile client. Sort of isn't, but the desktop. Right.
So it's like one beer a month at a bar for me that you're paying for.
$2 a month for a beer?
Ten more.
I thought it was $6.67 a month per user.
Oh,
is it really? If it's that, I've got to change my mind now. I don't know. free sounds good. $6.67 per user per month billed annually. $8 billed monthly. Well, that's actually a lot more than HipChat. HipChat was only $2.
Yeah, but there's no reason we shouldn't be able to be on the free tier.
No, the upgraded one basically gives you unlimited service integrations. Which you can only search and browse 10,000 most recent messages on the free one.
Yeah.
can't do guest access. priority support, Google authentication. Nah, the rest of that's fine. So it's basically, do we want to have more searchable stuff or not?
Let's be honest, we don't say anything important.
$8 a month per user.
It's so ephemeral.
I probably won't pay $100 a month for Slack.
That's pretty steep.
Yeah. I mean, I just use Merck again if I'm going to do that. I'll do that. Who's up next? What do you got? No, not you.
Oh, wait. Why am I next?
You're not.
I don't know. They changed it on us.
Is this yours? No. Which one's yours?
It says
which one's yours? Go to Jeremy.
Jeremy, what's your pick?
You going to go to me?
Yeah.
All right, well, I was pretty desperate. But there's a Steam sale on, and if you like micromanaging and taking over the world, and honestly getting a geography lesson at the same time if you are from south of the border, Europa Universalis. Bloody hell, that's hard to say.
Universalis.
Thank you. Europa Universalis 4 is $10 right now on Steam.
$9.99!
Well, no, it's $10.99 up here.
You're Canada.
Yeah, it's Canada. And honestly, I probably got a bargain on that because
Jeremy
the exchange rate's still not very
Jeremy
good.
Jeremy doesn't have VR support.
I doubt it because that would just be very entertaining.
Because it's 2D.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, but this is what the Total War series kind of wanted to become. And because Steam has decided to screw around with Civ 4 a bunch, looking for a new thing to play with my dad and my brother, this is sort of the way that we go. It's
cool.
Insanely complex. It will eat up all of the time that you do not have. It's like Defense Grid, only you have to put more effort into it. It's a hell of a lot of fun.
Cool.
And for $10 or $11... Yeah, if you don't have any spare time, well, now you're going to have even less.
I'm pretty sure $11 Canadian is like $3 American, right? So that's a hell of a deal up there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it's not quite that good. Oh. Or dollars creeping up again, unfortunately.
Gotcha. All right, Josh, what's your pick?
Mine?
Yours.
You know, I bought this SSD the other day.
Huh.
And, you know, it's not for my main machine, but okay. 480 gigs for... Well, I think it's, what, $109 right now. I think I got it for $99 a couple of days ago on sale. It, you know, it's not the fastest thing out there, UTLC, but boy, is it just dirt cheap. It uses the Phison controller, so it's not horrific, but, again, it's for my wife, and she appreciates any upgrade.
Yeah.
And she doesn't run benchmarks nonstop on her SSD to see exactly how fast it is. And so all she knows is things are just slightly faster.
Is it 10 cents a gig yet?
Nope.
Damn it.
Not quite.
All right.
Not there yet.
We'll get there. Very cool. And now, Alan, I'll let you go.
So I ran into... I didn't know this. On archive.org, if you look up old games now, it'll actually fire up MAME and play them right in the browser.
Yeah?
Like what Ryan's doing.
What?
Like right now.
That's not me. Playing like, game... This is illegal.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean...
No, it's archive.org. They don't take anything that's illegal. This is all stuff that's gone to
public domain. Oh, I love this game.
There you go. So there's
our coin.
There's like Road Blasters, and he's inserting a bunch of coins.
Coins.
Yeah. And you gotta hit... control is the gas. And alt is shoot.
He just spent $275.
You know, left and right. Left, left, left. There you go.
What, you don't think I'm a veteran?
Well, I don't know.
No.
But the steering is, like, absolute, so you have to, like...
Oh, yeah, you have to, like, go back.
You don't have a steering wheel, so, you know. But, whoa, how did... Oh, he hit... He rotated the screen.
I don't know.
He hit alt.
I don't know.
The arrow.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, you're stopped and you're shooting
I can't.
The landscape.
Alt up.
Okay.
There.
All right. I
now,
can't
now
hit
don't
control.
Turn. Don't turn while
hey,
accelerating.
I can't turn while accelerating. Only
hey,
shoot
back in the day,
while
we can
not
only
turning.
Accept so many inputs at
a
time.
I need. Oh no! I need my
he needs,
helicopter
he needs
friend.
Some,
God,
he needs
no!
A wheel
I did it again.
Oh no! He rotated his. What's funny is it's not rotating it for the stream.
It's like
yeah.
splitting it off into a separate window.
It's only rotating
yeah,
it for
a new window on the stream.
Anyway, so if you don't have a laptop that's going to auto-rotate your screen, if you hit Alt
that's
arrows,
really awful.
Then you can play old MAME, old arcade games in MAME. It's added challenge. See, the arcade version didn't do this. What a challenge if every time you hit the gas while turning.
You're still doing well.
You know, yeah, you're still doing all right. You're almost at the finish. Almost. Oh, he's out of gas. Almost. Oh, he made it.
Spin out.
It's like he had just enough
gas.
I wanted the little thing that comes down and puts a cool weapon on
you. You can, drop caltrops and fun things like that.
Yeah. Death Race 2000.
Yeah, Death Race 2000.
Well, it was before the Death Race 2000.
Oh, well, yeah,
there was
Death Race in the original one, too.
1990.
Yeah, I used to play that in the computer lab at high school.
So, yeah. It looked like they had a bunch of other stuff.
How do I use that one?
I don't remember.
Spacebar.
Oh, look, spacebar fires, too. So now I can actually do this correctly. Well,
I know I've picked this before because there are thousands of games on archive.org.
Yeah, but they didn't used to have them complete with the emulator built into your browser, right?
Yeah, they did.
Oh,
give me those gas balls.
It was a little bit buggy back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, this is like...
And by that, I mean it was really bloody buggy back in the day.
Yeah, bonus fuel.
And it looked like they had emulators up for even other, I think there was even Commodore and stuff.
Give me that fuel, dog.
So, pretty cool. If you just want to
give me that fuel.
Be all retro.
I ran over it.
All right, everybody.
Look at those sprites.
That is it for our show today. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Make sure you go to pcper.com and read all the stories and stuff we talked about and see all the stuff we're going to talk about next week's show. Really appreciate you if you would do that. And pcper.com/podcast, you can find all the links to our video version download, our audio version download, the YouTube video. And then, of course, pcper.com/subscribe and all that other stuff as well. And don't forget, if you want to support us, you like what we do, you think we're funny, we're entertaining, I don't know, maybe any of that stuff. Remember, patreon.com/pcper. Oh, my gosh, look at this. We got we have last minute ones coming in. Joe Clark pledged $50.
Awesome.
Woo-hoo. Joe Clark kicks ass.
Yeah, he does.
PC Perspectology pledge $3.14. Thank you very much.
In the offering plate.
I was going to say
for everyone.
I was going to say NASDAQ, but it's actually NADSAC. NADSAQ pledge $3.50. So congratulations for getting me to say that out loud for $3.50 a month. We really appreciate it. And like I said, thank you to everybody for supporting us. It is awesome. We will see you next week. I'm Ryan Schraub.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walworth.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
Bye.